that just like the Lord, so very much like Jesus. So
this is Larry Jones. You are listening to the Grace and Glory Hour of the Dyer Baptist Church with our co-pastors, David M. Atkinson and Dr. Lee Atkinson. We are coming to you from Dyer, Indiana. Our prayer is that you will be strengthened by the word today. Now, here is our pastor.
Hebrews 11:4, please. The first word is by. Let's read together. By faith, Abel offered unto God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain, by which he obtained witness that he was righteous, God testifying of his gifts, and by it he, being dead, yet speaketh. In your opinion, what does the word it refer back to? What is the antecedent of it? And I would grant that there could be several answers, but in your opinion, what does the word it refer back to? By what? Anyone else? That's part of it, for sure. That's part of it. I would link what Acacia has said, Abel's sacrifice, with the faith that made it acceptable to God. It seemed like his brother, Cain, did not offer what he offered by faith. Without faith, it's what? It is impossible to please God. And so, I mean, people debate whether it was because Cain brought a bloodless sacrifice that it was not accepted before God, but we know that at least Cain's sacrifice was faithless. It was bloodless, but was also faithless. Now look. Look at the last phrase in Hebrews 11:4. By it, by faith, Abel, being dead, yet speaketh. The inspired author to the Hebrews says that Abel speaks from the grave. He, being dead, Abel still speaks or influences us today. He influences us toward a life of faith. Isn't that amazing? He's been in the grave for thousands and thousands of years, but he still influences people today. And though this series necessarily requires a lot of negative history and a lot of negative information, and though this series necessarily requires a lot of warnings, there's also the positive aspect to it. Even as other men have had very wicked and negative influences to the world and the culture, we can have a positive influence. We can speak when our time comes to pass on. We can speak, we can influence from our grave. And I want us to pause here for just a minute of quietness, and let's make it a time of prayer, and let's make a commitment to the Lord. Lord, I know I'll never be sinless and perfect in this life, but I do want to have a positive influence in my family, my nation, and the world. Would you make that commitment today? Let's not just be saddened and oppressed with a gloomy cloud because of this series. Let's use it to inspire us that we are going to make a positive influence on the world while we're here and when it's our time to go on. Would you consider at least making a commitment to having a positive influence on Indiana, Illinois, America, and the whole world? Thank you. All right, would you please turn off the light? Thank you so much. Now, I use this to give you a smile. And really, I did not Photoshop my head in. And I didn't ask Brother Paul to Photoshop my head in. That's really me, and that's really Red Square, Moscow, Russia. I should warn you, though, at this point, the next two sentences will be truth. But for a few sentences after that, I'm adding a little bit of my imagination, all right? All right. First two sentences are truth, and then a little bit of imagination added in. I was out for a walk the other day, quite a few days ago, in Red Square in Moscow. It was the same time when I went to see the body of Lenin, whom they bring up on a hydraulic lift up into a glass area after they fixed him up again. And you walk by and you see the body, and then when the corpse needs more fixing up, they just push the button, take it down, and bring him back up again. This was taken not far from where they keep displaying that body of Lenin to keep controlling the minds of communists. That's why they do it. It's an embodiment of a mindset. It's an embodiment of a godless philosophy. And in this case, the body is Vladimir Lenin. But here I was, out for a walk in Red Square. I was there when I taught seminary in Moscow. On my walk, from this point on, it's apocryphal. On my walk, I came across an old acquaintance named Carl. Do you know my old acquaintance named Carl? I call him an acquaintance because he's certainly not a friend. He did have a friend there with him. This is Karl Marx, and the old friend is Vladimir Lenin, and they were about to have a game of chess. This is Tsar Nicholas of the Romanov family, Tsar Nicholas II. Nicholas II, understandably, did not have a kind word. Not one kind word for Karl Marx or Vladimir Lenin. And so I said, "Karl, I have more than a few bones to pick with you." I said, "I cannot tell you how strongly I disagree with your ideas that change the world." Karl replied, Oh, come now, David. Let's have a game of chess first, and you'll feel better, and then we can talk about my philosophies. And then after we talk about my philosophies, then we'll pick the bones." I replied, "Not on your life, Carl. I would never trust you at chess. Anyway, let's just get right to it and pick those bones of disagreement." Carl smiled, and they told me he always smiled when he got a chance to discuss his theories. That's how he changed the world. One person at a time in the beginning, and then there's the exponential multiplication, one and one and one and one and one, and then eventually millions and gigantic spaces of the earth. These three men, of course, were socialist impersonators who made their living in the very capitalist way of relieving me of $20 for giving me the privilege of posing for a picture with them. Because they must add a dose of capitalism to their socialism. I suppose by now the fee is now $30. But I paid the fee so I could help to tell the story of one man who still rules the world. Now, the man who was the impersonator of Tsar Nicholas II looks very much like the picture you'll see in the history books. Tsar Nicholas II was the last member of the Romanov family to reign in Russia. Nicholas II and his wife, Empress Alexandra, their five children and four servants, were executed at Yekaterinburg near the Ural Mountains. They moved them from house to house to house so that the royalists who wanted to keep the king in power, so that the royalists could not find them and rescue them, they finally took them to a house in Yekaterinburg near the Ural Mountains on the night of July 16, 1918. And there, behind double doors, locked doors, the Bolsheviks, apparently at the express command of Vladimir Lenin by this time, shot, bayoneted Tsar Nicholas, Empress Alexandra, their five children, and the four servants. Their bodies, the first set of bodies, were discovered in a field called Porosinkov Log. That was the name of the field, Porosinkov Log. And history tells us that the bodies were moved from their initial place because the word was getting out and people were getting close. So even after that night of execution, they moved the bodies and reburied them. The bodies of Tsar Nicholas, his wife, and all but two of the children, and including all the servants, the four servants, were found in 1979. And by DNA, it was proven that the remains were the bodies of the emperor, his wife, and all of the children but two. In 2007, I remember it, it's not that long ago, in 2007, an amateur archaeologist found the bodies of the last two in a second grave, and it was again proven by DNA analysis that those were the remaining two of the royal family. It was a little boy and a girl. And the boy, according to the pictures, seemed to have been the youngest. So probably it was the two youngest that were buried in a second grave. Yes, you will hear, if you're listening on audio, a few snickers because we have our Tom and Jerry cartoon again. We need something at least to rest our minds for just a couple minutes in the midst of all of this spiritual warfare. We have the cat Tom and little Jerry the mouse standing back to back. Tom with a cat-sized pistol in his paw, and little Jerry with something in his paw. While it is true, there's a chair over here. Oh, you're counting. While it is true that bayonets and guns sometimes eventually play a role in the war for the allegiance of men's hearts, as this humorous Tom and Jerry cartoon illustrates, while it's true that bayonets and guns eventually make them into play, I believe that the longer and certainly more subtle and insidious battle takes place in the minds. The battle starts in the minds and the hearts before the guns and the bayonets come out. It's not nearly as messy if you can change people by changing their mind. as it is to have to use the bayonet. But of course, anti-God people have no qualms about using the gun and the bayonet if the philosophizing won't do the job first. Satan's battle for the minds of the whole world's population is very real. It's very real. And Acacia, when I think about your prayer request and the reality in our own nation and in my homeland of Canada and back in Great Britain where my kin came from, I get very, very sad about this battle. I do. It ought to make us sad. This battle for the minds of men and women, children and youths ought to make us sad. But I not only get sad, there comes a line where I get angry. And I believe there is such a thing as righteous anger. Be ye angry and sin not. Let not the sun go down upon your wrath. And my presenting this series is an attempt to channel my anger and my sadness to try to make a difference in the lives of the children who are in the room and the teens and young adults who are in the room. All right. We saw Psalm 10:4 last week. Psalm 10, verse 4. The wicked, through the pride of his countenance or his face, will not seek after God. The wicked, through the pride of his countenance, will not seek after God. God is not in all his thoughts. I told you it was a battle for the minds. Henry Thiessen, in his lectures in systematic theology, wrote, "Rationalism may be described this way. The man who rejects the idea of a supernatural..." That word supernatural is so important. More and more, I am seeing that this world is divided up into naturalists who just believe we're sinew, skin, flesh and bones, and it's all over when we die. This world is divided up essentially into two groups. The naturalists, you're just a blob. You're a blob in the womb, and you're just a bigger blob after you're born. And when you die, you die. And the other group is supernaturalists. And I can have a conversation with a supernaturalist, but I have nowhere to go after two or three sentences with someone who's only a naturalist. If someone says, this is all there is, you know, bones that will decay and money in the bank and it's over when your heart stops beating, I cannot have a conversation of any length with someone who's only a naturalist. And naturalism and rationalism. Rationalism is essentially the worship of the mind, the human mind, and the thinking process. Thiessen said, the man who rejects the idea of a supernatural revelation of and from God turns to human reason for the solution of all his problems. And Psalm 94:11 says, the Lord knoweth the thoughts of man, that they're vanity. The Lord knoweth the thoughts of man, that they are vanity. Psalm 94:11. And Isaiah 55:8 says, God speaking, for my thoughts are not your thoughts, saith the Lord. That's a very relevant reference. God says, my thoughts are not your thoughts. And in Psalm 139, 23, King David wrote, search me, O God, and know my heart. Try or examine or test me and know my... Yes, that's what King David said. He was wise in that respect. Search me, know my heart. Try me, examine me, and know my thoughts. Rationalistic thinking is a system based upon human reason operating independently from God and divine revelation. Now, it's not wrong to reason. And I wouldn't want anyone to extrapolate or take this further than what Dave Breeze intended it or why the way I intended it. Rationalistic thinking is a system based upon human reason operating independently. And that's the qualification or the amplification. Operating independently from divine revelation. I'm telling you, young people, and all of us, it's not wrong to reason. It's not wrong to reason. It's not wrong to think. God himself said, come now and let us reason together. That's why we have a Christian school. We want God to help us turn out thinkers. People who know the steps of logic. I'm not always logical, but I want to be. Reason in and of itself does not have to be bad. But when you have human reason apart from God, you're headed for a mess. You're headed for disaster. And that is what Dave Breeze and I warn about. Human reason apart from divine revelation. Because God is not the source of the values and fundamental or basic principles which govern the thinking of the rationalist, then the thinking is inevitably flawed. Yes, reason with God, but start with God. Don't think that you yourself and only you are the measure of all thinking and all reason. If the thinking is flawed, the behavior will be flawed. If the thinking is flawed or the reasoning is flawed, the behavior will be flawed. All right, a moment to review. We have looked at and been warned against three kinds of bad, dangerous thinking from the book of Colossians. So far, we've been warned against man-centered thinking and subversive thinking, crooked thinking, surreptitiously, from underneath, in a hidden way, subversive thinking, where people just don't come out and say, I'm trying to reprogram you. They're sly and sneaky about it. We've also been warned against rationalistic thinking, thinking that has no room for God. Let's come back, please, now to Colossians 2:8. Colossians 2:8. Colossians 2:8, and let's read it together again in unison. This is such a watershed verse. Beware lest any man spoil you through philosophy and vain deceit after the tradition of men, after the rudiments of the world, and not after Christ. We are also, Numbers 4 and 5, we are to beware of a show of intellect. Pride in intellect. We're to beware of a show of intellect. Vain deceit. If you're keeping track of the exposition, we're looking at the phrase now in Colossians 2:8, which is vain, empty deceit. A prideful, empty intellect. Then, number 5, we're to be warned of human authority, which is after the tradition of men. We're to be on the lookout for human authority after the tradition of men that is not based on the supremacy of the Lord Jesus and his authority. Let's go to Isaiah 8:20 now. Isaiah 8:20, please. 8th chapter of Isaiah and the 20th verse. Verse 19, to take just a moment on context. I only wish I had longer on context. But if you look quickly at verse 19, The prophet Isaiah is talking about bad philosophies. Familiar spirits. We call them fortune tellers. And we see their signs around town. Usually a small house with a neon sign, a palm reader, fortune teller, and they're open at all hours. I go by at 9 o'clock at night, and the sign is off and on. So, verse 19 gets us ready for 20. Don't go with those who seek unto them that have familiar spirits, and unto wizards that peep and that mutter. The witch or the warlock has this chant, the peeping and the muttering, as they call up supposedly the evil spirits. Isaiah says, God doesn't want us to do that. Verse 20 now. Let's read it together, please. 8:20. To the law and to the testimony. If they speak not according to this word, it is because there is no light in them. Now there are certain secret societies. Certain secret societies or clubs, still very much alive in the whole world. Some of these secret societies are only for women, others only for men, and they make a big deal of light. That's one of their main images. I had a precious man come to the church once in South Carolina, and they were from the biggest Baptist denomination in the whole world, and they kept coming back. And I knew they were not unaffiliated Baptists. They were prestigious people. And he'd had a falling out with the powers that be at the big Baptist church a few blocks away. And he started to come. It wasn't till I went to visit their home. It's amazing what you can find out when you visit. And you ought to visit, especially when you're considering receiving new members. And I went and I said, you've been coming, and I wanted to touch base with you, give you the opportunity to ask any questions, because I just knew they could be in for a bumpy ride, because their church was much more to the left than the church we had planted in West Columbia. They said, I was just, you get puffed up, and why do you keep coming back? Oh, they said, it's because you preach on the light. You preach on the light. And I had been in the book of John, going chapter by chapter through John. The first Sunday they came, and I just preached quite innocently. Jesus said, I'm the light of the world. Well, he is, isn't he? But they said, you preached on the light. But they didn't mean it the way I meant it. They were talking about the enlightenment, almost like Gnosticism, degrees of enlightenment, and you join the secret society and you work your way up, and there are all these symbols and private secret initiations and so on and so on, and then you could become a grand master. Well, Isaiah, speaking for God, said, don't go after those who have familiar spirits unto wizards, those involved with all this secret initiations, to the law and to the testimony. Compare it with the word. Isaiah said, compare it to the word. If they speak not according to this word, the word from God through the prophet, it is because there is no real light in them. All right. Oh, I like this. The fact that many people believe something does not make it true. The fact that most people believe something does not make it true. Children, I want you to know that if your parents have you in a Bible-believing church, it's because they love you and they want the best for you. Teenagers, I say the same to you. From time to time, the enemy will perch on your shoulder and say, well, it's just too straight. It's just too narrow. But I want to tell you. If your parents, guardians, want your life to be centered around Jesus Christ and the Word, they are showing you the right path. The path that will be best in eternity. But I must also tell you, and I don't want to distress you, but history proves that those who believe in Jesus are not always liked for very long. And we're in the minority. That just means we who believe in the Bible and Christ, there's not as many of us as those who are following the devil. But they always say, well, you're just a minority. Most of us believe this way. That doesn't make it true. And children, if you ever meet young people who drink beer and do drugs, and they say, well, everybody's doing it. Run away. Get away from that. Most people are going the wrong way. And just because most people believe something or practice something does not make it true or even healthy for your mind and your body. In fact, the fact that all people might believe something does not make it true. Broad is the way, wide, that leads to destruction. The fact that all people say they believe something doesn't make it true. It's true only if it accords or agrees with God's word. We've seen that there in Isaiah. All right, the final two warnings in Colossians 2:8. The final two warnings. And the sixth warning comes to us from that phrase, after the rudiments, the base elements, the low elements of the world, we're to beware of the worldly, time-only perspective. We're to beware of the philosophy that says, well, eat, drink, and be merry, just party, 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 because tomorrow we die. That's the worldly, temporal perspective. The base things, the rudiments of the natural world, the creature world. Now, rudiments refers to base, lowest. The lowest, yes, the lowest instincts, or the lowest basis notions. Beware of that worldly perspective. Let's go to 1 John 2:15 and 16. 1 John 2:15 and 16. 1 John 2:15 and 16. Good. I'm glad when you turn there. Wonderful. Let's read it together, please. 1 John 2:15 and 16. The first word is love. Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. Our daughter April gave me a bag of chocolate-covered malt balls for Christmas. Not moth balls. Malt balls. A bag. Yep. Do you know what my body wants to do? What my body wants to do? My body wants to go out and get six bags and eat them all at one time. Do you think that'd be smart? No, that wouldn't be very smart. That would be a rudiment. A base, low thing that would make me very, very sick for several days. All right, the base things. Did we finish the verse? Did we? We did. All right. These things are the lust of the flesh, my appetite for malt, the farmer's wife across the county road from us when I was a boy used to make malt milkshakes, and I loved them. I like malt, but it will not be smart just because my body wants 5 or 6 bags to eat. 5 or 6 bags. The lust of the flesh, they even look good to me. The lust of the eyes. And the pride of life, I guess I just want 6 bags. My brother has 4, I want 6. All right, we're to beware of the rudiments, the base things of the world. And then that 7th phrase, we're to beware of the philosophies that are not after Christ. That's antichrist thinking. Antichrist thinking. It does not square with a biblical revelation of Christ. It does not square with a biblical revelation of Christ, with his supremacy and his kingship.
Isn't that just like the Lord? So very much like Jesus.
Thank you for joining us today. We'd love to hear from you. Our email address is graceglory7@juno.com. Graceglory, the number 7, at juno.com. Pastor David M. Atkinson also has a ministry on Facebook and invites you to connect with him there. Now, until the next time, remember to walk softly with the Lord.